There's a global pandemic. Deep, deep into our veins, into our souls. It has consumed us. It is driving us crazy. It is building into what could be the worst thing this entire civilization has ever faced. Maybe. Who knows? We do. The goats. The people staring at them for you, so you don't have to. You're two hosts this week, guiding you, holding your hand as we venture through the plague lands. Welcome one and all. I'm your host, Steven, joined as always by the incredible, Dr. Professor Jacob, who's actually not a doctor, but just should be. Like, why not have gone the extra mile to become Dr. Jacob? But we're both here, on this very special night. It's a very special staring at goats. I think drastic, changes in the universe have occurred in the last week since we talked to, Coleman Ranahan last week. But we'll get to that.
Pat Renahan or Hanahan.
Yes, yes. But we will get to that first. Jacob, yes. We started this show back 32 weeks ago with the idea that maybe 33 weeks ago, right, because we're off an episode. 33 weeks ago with the idea that maybe we would drink a beverage at the top of every episode.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to say that we're drinking
one.
We're drinking one. Jacob, what is... Yeah. Oh, crack that beverage open. What are we drinking this evening?
So, I, for everybody here for the pre-show, they kind of got a little taste of this. Not really. No pun intended. Steven and I have been talking about trying said beer for a while now. We've been talking... Steven said, Jacob, we got to try this. It's something very special. And I'm like, yeah, we probably should. We should tater and de-wane it.
Yeah.
This was what, months ago you had mentioned this?
Months. This is maybe a year. Maybe pre-COVID. Who knows? It's been a while.
It was a while ago.
Yeah.
I get a phone call. Or I get a text message from Steven saying, Jacob, 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 Jacob.
That is literally
Jacob,
what it
Jacob,
said.
Jacob,
Jacob. That is a lot. I did write a lot of Jacobs.
At Tasty Beverage Company, they have said beer. And I'm like, they do. Ordered. So I drove over there. They put it in the bed of my truck. I drove over to Steven's house. I hand delivered it. He went, ah, da, 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 da. What do we have? A Pabst Blue Ribbon hard coffee, baby. It is apparently PBR mixed with a little bit of coffee. So I wonder, how do they make this? Do they just take like PBR and just dump a whole bunch of coffee in it, shake it up, and then pour it out into your glass? Is that what they do?
That's a wonderful. That's, I'd like to imagine that it's just sent through a coffee maker as the water. So yeah, like, the coffee's in the filter like normal, and they just fill the reservoir with PBR, and then that's what you get. That's what I want to believe is the process.
Well, so I'm pouring it out here, and I'm immediately struck by the color. It is like this cream color. It looks like coffee.
Ooh.
With a whole bunch of creamer in it.
Yeah.
It's not a beer color whatsoever. It's PBRs mixed with cream.
Yeah, that's very much, it's a very, like, I had a heavy dairy diet go through me kind of operation there. Let's
cheers.
Cheers. Cheers, sir.
Here's to us, those like us. Damn few of us. Thank God.
OMG. Jacob.
Guys.
Go, what just happened? What just
That's deserves a second little sip.
That's a Yoo-hoo.
It's like a Yoo-hoo with just a touch of a kick. A coffee kick. Not like a chocolate kick, but more of a coffee kick.
It
does not taste like beer.
That is good.
It is.
That is good.
Yoo-hoo with a little bit of coffee.
That is G-O-O-D.
And it's got a little bit of a burn in the back of your throat to let you know that there's some alcohol in there. Steven, I'm shocked. I'm surprised. It's like a Frappuccino mixed with a little bit of alcohol.
I don't even know. I did not expect this. This is going to be hard to not drink because it is coffee and it is 9 o'clock at night. It's going to be hard not to drink because it tastes really flipping good.
I'm surprised.
Really flipping good.
Hold on, wait. Now, let's clarify. It does not taste like beer at all. There is absolutely no beer flavor whatsoever. It is just coffee with a little bit of alcohol in it. That's essentially what it is. It's like a Frappuccino with a touch of alcohol.
Yeah. I would go out to say it's very equivalent to one of those Starbucks like drinks, the vanilla, probably a vanilla one, maybe a mocha. A mocha, those glass Frappuccino dealios they sell at the gas station. Mm-hmm. That's what it tastes like. It tastes like a Starbucks coffee drink. But it definitely makes your ears burn a little.
I was expecting PBR with a little bit of coffee in it rather than coffee with a little bit of PBR in it.
Yeah, that's not PBR in the least bit, Jacob. That tastes good.
That's amazing. Good.
I am impressed. Amazing. I am impressed. PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon, I'm sorry for everything I ever said that was bad. I'm sorry that I anticipated poop juice, and what I got is far from that. From that.
The expectations were low. Need real low.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
We literally just said that we took coffee grounds and put PBR in it and read the coffee through the coffee. That's what our expectations were.
That's what I thought I was going to get.
Wow.
But it's not. Now, I do have to be careful because that is coffee. The alcohol part's great, but I'm also lactose intolerant, so I got that going for me. Hey, Steffi, I just drank a whole glass of milk. I'm coming to get in bed.
And you did the upper and downer, so you're just going to be kind of half up, half down the entire time.
Night. Yeah, it's going to be an exciting event for everybody. This is good, Jacob. Well, I tell you what, now that I'm relaxed and I've got some PBR in my system, I think I'm ready to talk about the plague again. I think I'm down with it. Now, Jacob, this week has been a massive week in terms of COVID news. Like we've had a lot of COVID news throughout this show, but I think we're staring down the barrel of a new administration that's prioritized COVID, which is something we haven't heard in the past. We're looking at announcement of a vaccine that's 90% effective from Pfizer, though. You'll have to update us in a moment about the peer review process because I understand it was not quite completed or not started yet.
No.
But there's a whole lot. We got a whole lot of news to get through, people, and we're going to get there because there's a lot of excitement.
I do think that there's a couple of things that I think is important this week with just some of the transitioning to new administrations. Number one, they definitely prioritized mask wearing. I mean, Joe Biden came out right away and said, please, dear God, wear your masks. You know, it's sad that we've politicized mask wearing, but the bottom line is that mask wearing is a good thing. The science is on the side of mask wearing, so do it. And I feel like Joe Biden prioritized that in some of his speeches. I wish that Donald Trump would have been as straight-laced relative to the wearing your mask as I feel like Joe Biden has been. But sure. Relative to the coronavirus task force, I mean, there was a new task force that Joe Biden put in place for the transition period. It does not replace the current task force. Obviously, it's more to help him get up to speed and transition into potentially new administration and new policies. It looked like a who's who's list of the Obama administration, because I believe there were quite a few folks that he knew from the Obama administration on there. There were a couple of immunologists, so they did pull in quite a few with expertise, not only infectious disease, but also immunology. So, you know, I feel like overall it's a pretty good transition plan, but, you know, absent was obviously Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx and a couple others, but, you know, they can't really work for the government and then be on top of that be on the transition team, because I feel like that would be a little too much of a conflict of interest. They are advising the president. They are on his task force. He has not fired them yet. So, you know, it seems like it would be a little bit short-sighted to have them try to help Joe Biden at this point. Maybe after the transition, they keep their positions there. I don't know, but
yeah, it's not unusual. Fauci's been there for across multiple presidents.
Five.
So it's,
I think five.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time. So it's not like that's a, you know, we've got to get him on our task force because we need him now. Like, he's been around for a really long time, and I think he'll continue to be.
Yeah. But overall, I thought it was pretty good from an administration perspective, a new administration perspective. Old administration, I still feel like they're doing some of the same things that they were doing before, so it's more status quo. So we're going to see what changes in the administration really bring. I will tell you that I think over the next couple of months, we're in a world of hurt regardless. If you look at the number of cases, we topped 100,000 in one day, right?
130.
130,000 in one day. Here in North Carolina, we almost topped 3,000, which would be a first for us. We're seeing massive outbreaks. The death rate is substantially low, which is good. But when we start going home for holidays and the elderly population really gets exposed a lot more, I'm interested to see what really happens around the holidays. Because, I mean, let's face it, we're getting into the cold months. So people are going to be indoors. We're heading into travel season. So people are going to be going and seeing their family, crossing state lines, doing other things. You know that these gatherings are not going to involve social distancing. Very few of them are probably going to be true traditional or true mask wearing or the expectations of mask wearing. I mean, Uncle Joe, oh, he's fine. He's Uncle Joe. He's good. I have to say that there's one thing that Dr. Fauci has said that has resonated with me specifically is we had the opportunity in the summer to take care of this. We decided not to. Now we are in the absolute worst possible position going into the holidays.
Yeah. I like that phrasing. We decided not to, because it was most definitely a choice at multiple levels, personal levels, government levels, federal government levels, global levels. There's decisions about how serious to take it and what moves to make. And in a lot of places, we did not do the recommended ideas. That PBR is already getting to me. Scientific recommendations. You don't get to where we are by ignoring the WHO and the CDC.
Yeah. Well, and let's face it, we can't survive another economic shutdown.
Sure.
According to the to all reports. But if you look at the stock market, baby, stock market's almost at record highs. Well, bam! Og, there you go. Just for you.
There it is. That's Jacob calling it right now.
So, I mean, we're back and better than ever, baby.
I
don't know. We'll see what happens. I definitely don't think this podcast is going away in the next few weeks. I think we're going to be talking about it through Thanksgiving and through Christmas. I have a feeling we're going to be talking about it into next year. So 32 episodes in, 33 weeks in, and I don't see us slowing down.
Well, that's good news, Jacob. We'd hate to lose this podcast that we've been working so hard on for so long. I will say I want to transition a little bit to our normal roundtable before we get too into the meat of all the news and all the subjects and all the things that are worth discussing, because you brought up something very important. Thanksgiving is coming. Christmas mm-hmm. is coming. Santa Claus is loading his sleigh, baby. For a lot of people, they've already decorated for Christmas. They're like, F 2020, I'm done. Christmas is early this year. Whatever. I'm in that. I get it. That's pretty great. And I'd like to present what I think is a belief of some people that I've witnessed on the Facebook. Now,
Before I get into my spiel
about this, it's important to note that I am from South Alabama. I have all the redneck in my blood, in my veins, coursing through me. So when I say the term redneck, I don't say it in a derogatory way that some people might say it. I say it in a willful ignorance in a lot of ways, because it's just sometimes better just to put the big cooler full of tea and the casserole dish on the back of a tailgate if you don't have a table. You know, that's the kind of world I grew up in. I grew up in a place where you ride your four-wheeler to the mailbox, you ride your four-wheeler back, you put your tailgate down, you sit on it, you throw 15 kids in the back of it to go up the road. That is my existence. So I think I felt like I needed to make that a disclaimer. I love my family, and in a lot of ways, I love a lot of that culture. It's part of how I grew up. That being said, rednecks have a belief, I feel, that there's such a thing as a redneck bubble. If you put enough people together with camouflage on in the outside, in the outdoors, then you're protected from COVID. Doesn't matter how many people there are. Have your pig picking. Have your turkey shoot. Have your people all over the place. Ride around in your Polaris together. Because you're protected. Because you're rednecks. You're rough, tough, and don't take no guff. You know?
Hey, Dwayne. Yeah, if you wear camouflage, that means that COVID can't see you.
I mean, it's just logic, Tater. It's just logic. It ain't no secret. I mean, that's why God invented camo, so the bad stuff couldn't find you.
That's right. So wear your camouflage this third Thanksgiving.
Yeah. If he wanted everybody to find you, he'd have made trees orange.
Utter orange. That's what he would have made trees.
So anyway, the reason I bring this up is I'm privy to Facebook and family gatherings and events, and I see a thing that one of my family members was at, and a friend had posted some pictures. Oh, we're all together at this thing. The pictures, Jacob, that I saw are people just standing around all over each other. No masks, feeding pork to one another. Hey, do you want the leg? Let me get you some pork rib. You know, like, I mean, they are all clustered together.
It's a Southern pig picking. Don't tell me you haven't been. I mean, you've been.
I've been to a Southern pig picking. I know what it is. I know what it's like. And I know that you cannot social distance them because you want to stand close. You need to. It's the appearance of King of the Hill. You're standing by the fence, drinking beer, chit-chatting. Except this time you're around a fire at night and there's, you know, campers everywhere and everybody's doing stuff. But the thing is, I know a few of these people and I know what they do for a living, and that is the last place they should be for the sake of the people that they will be around. It's the last place that they should ever have gone, but it's family, it's friends, mm-hmm. it's people you know. And so they can't find us. We're in our redneck bubble and we're happy and no one can find us and COVID's not here. And it disappointed me. It's like, it's one of those places where I understand and I knew it was happening, but to see it is like anxiety inducing. It's harder to look at it, to know it and to then see it and have it confirmed by your very eyes that you have people you love that are doing things. Reckless feels like the wrong word, but just it's a poor decisions. I know some of them. I know one of them probably is like COVID bear can't get me. Like, I know at least one because that's kind of his personality. But like, you're just like, why are we doing this? Why have the pig picking? You could go on a pheasant shoot, Jacob. You go on a pheasant shoot. Go on a pheasant shoot. It's outside. You ride the four wheeler with the person that you're hanging out with on a daily basis anyway. That's all right. I think you could do that safely if you did it right. But the pig picking where you're standing over the food talking to each other while they're coming through the buffet line? No, that's not part of it. That's not what you do. So
I will tell you this. I'm a country boy as well. I grew up in rural North Carolina. I know what those parties are like. I love those parties.
Yes.
Those parties are fun. You just sit around, drink beer, and talk shit to your buddies. you eat great food. The pig is usually cooked by a professional who's really just an amateur, but he drinks all day and he has a pig cooker, and that's what he does on his weekends because he just enjoys doing it. And it tastes delicious, and the sides are just absolutely wonderful, and the time you have a good time. And I miss those days. I have missed those kinds of things with friends and family. I'm not sure right now is the time that I will re-engage. I think I'm going to wait a few more months.
Yeah.
And maybe even longer.
Give it a little bit of time. But
I mean, especially looking around, I mean, I and this is kind of rolls into some of my round table. It rolls into the decisions that I've made. I contacted my boss just this week and said, look, man, I'm not comfortable coming in every day anymore or every other day. Because before I was going in 2 days a week and I was working from home 3 days a week. And I just told him, look, I'm just not comfortable doing it. I know we have the safeguards. I know we have protections. But when you have 3,000-4,000 cases a day, you have 130,000 cases in the U.S. every single day. It's here, it's everywhere, and I just don't want to take a risk for my family right now. So I'm going to choose to work remotely more, and if I absolutely have to go in, I'll go in. Yeah. Which may be once a week. It may be once every other week, whatever it may be. But that's where I'm at. I mean, I'm actively making the decision to start more restrictive type of approach. I'm not going to go on a strict stay at home like we were, but I'm going to get as close to it as I feel comfortable that I think we can. Back to some delivery of groceries or picking them up, back to, you know, those kinds of things. We're only going out when necessary and obviously masking up and getting, getting prepped to go out. So yeah, I think that's where I'm at is I've revisited that with my wife and we've made that decision to avoid the public again. And yeah. It sucks because I want to see friends. I want to see family. I want to see coworkers. I want to see acquaintances in the community that I'd go drink beer with. I don't feel comfortable doing it right now with the situation we're in.
Yeah, that's completely reasonable. We haven't earned it. Mm-hmm. We haven't earned the right to see each other. And we could have done that by putting in a little bit of extra sweat equity. and by that, usually you're talking about doing a lot of things. I mean, doing nothing. Sweat equity in terms of sitting on your couch and watching reruns of The Witcher. You're going to watch that for the third time in a row.
Do you think that we would have taken a different approach had it not been an election year?
That's a really good question. And I'm personally trying not to look back as much as I'm trying to look forward. But you have to look back to kind of understand what to do next, how we got here, and that kind of thing. And I don't think it matters. I think that even had it not been an election year, the current administration would have done exactly what they did. Because I believe you're being led by people who don't believe in it. Because it was always going to be the economy. It was always going to be the economy needs to stay up. There was never a time where it's like, well, we can sacrifice it because it's only the second year. It would have been like, well, that leaves a bad first impression on me, and that's not going to happen. And this was like a bad lasting impression. I do think it affected the outcome of the most recent event. The people went out and voted, man, and I think a lot of those people voted against the actions taken regarding this pandemic, because there's a lot of people that are not seeing their families, not seeing their kids, not watching kids graduate, not missing their senior year of high school, where those kids can vote now. Those are 18-year-olds. They participated, and they lost out because we didn't act.
So I talked to a buddy of mine, and it's one of my best buddies. It's the person who I was the best man at their wedding. Steven officiated their wedding. I mean, I spoke to him this week. And I asked him very bluntly about all the election year stuff. And, you know, he comes from a family that's fairly right wing and they're definitely supportive of a lot of right wing policies. And he said, Jacob, you won't believe this, but my dad did not vote for the current president. And I said, hold on, wait, what?
They're in Pennsylvania, too.
And he said, my dad just was so upset with the way he handled COVID-19.
Yeah.
And he said that swayed his vote. And I'm like, holy crap. A hardcore right-wing Republican was swayed because of COVID-19 and the poor execution. I'm like, that's wow. That's a statement. Because
and you heard
I wasn't
one story. Yeah. And that was one story. And there are a lot of stories like that. It was either the handling of it or it was the strength of the character. Mm-hmm. Of what we have in front of us, and that affected a lot of people. A lot of people turned around and went, "I got principles." And I, you know what? I mean, to be fair, we try not to go down that road on the show, and I don't want to go down it. But I understand, and I empathize with people who have principles, and they've made those decisions, and I get it. I want people to know I get it. Whichever way you went, some folks have felt like they had an impossible choice, and I think that's fair.
Hold on, wait. I don't think we should. There's no criticizing people's votes. I mean, they vote for a reason, and I don't feel like I should ever criticize somebody's votes because that's exact. They have made a decision based on their personal beliefs and their personal belief structure and their current situation in life.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll never criticize somebody for voting for Joe Biden. I won't criticize somebody for voting for the Libertarian candidate. I won't criticize somebody for voting for Donald Trump. I will criticize you if you haven't thought about it. and you just blindly followed the masses and listened to somebody, some talking head on some news outlet and said, oh, they told me to vote this way, so that means that I need to vote this way. It means that you haven't done your homework and you haven't thought about it.
Yeah. But I mean, it definitely, in going back to, I guess, the original question, I think hardcore that this would have, this was going to happen one way or the other.
It's going to be the same regardless.
Because the country, it put the country in a negative spot, and our current administration doesn't like negative press. They weren't going to let any negative press for the entire 4-year span come out. It just was going to be the enemy. If it was a negative outlook, it was going to be the enemy.
Here's what I never understood about the press secretary and really the Donald Trump administration is there's always going to be negative press, right?
Sure.
Every decision you make, there's going to be a group of people, half of the population, roughly 125 million people that hate your decision. Regardless of what you do. I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, the only way you're not going to get that is to have a completely unifying decision. Which rarely happens in a president's span. I think George Bush had one opportunity, and I don't know if Barack Obama even had an opportunity to see that kind of a unification.
The closest you get is
Bill Clinton never saw that unity. George H. Bush maybe might have seen that unity a little bit, but I don't think he did as well. But very rarely do you see the opportunity to actually unify the country. And a lot of it requires, unfortunately, a disaster. I mean, 9/11 was one that I immediately think of for George Bush. 2008, you can talk about 2007, 2008, the crash, but I don't think that unified the country as much as it unified the country and we need to do something. I don't necessarily think that this is the right thing. I mean, people still criticize the auto bailouts and, you know, the insurance company bailouts and, you know, too big to fail. And I mean, there was a lot of criticism there. So,
I
felt like this was COVID was actually an opportunity to really unify the nation. And unfortunately, I feel like rather than unify, he played into that 50% and really, let it get to him a little bit. And now we had 50% on one side and 50% on the other. And unfortunately we're not as unified as we were that first month, that March 2020.
Sure. Yeah. And it stands like the two campaigns are stark contrast of one another. One saying it's gone, the other saying it has to be priority number one. And thus far has planned for that. The first thing, President-elect, because we can say it because we believe that it's done. Joe Biden said was I'm starting a coronavirus task force on Monday, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, it was in planning. They talked to people, all that happened, but that's the goal is we're firing this thing up and we're gonna start planning for day one, and you're already seeing news of like national mask mandate like is a likely thing. Now, will the mask mandate require any sort of penalty if somebody doesn't wear one? No, you can't enforce that. But I think you will try to get governors on board. Absolutely. It's a symbolic effort, but it's a symbolic effort that I hope works. I think it's too much deep-rooted disgust of mask. Jacob, I walked in Lowe's. I walked in Lowe's Home Improvement. And right as I was walking in the door, I thought I saw a guy walk in without a mask. I was like, well, surely he can't come in without a mask. Maybe he'll put one in when he gets inside because I give him the benefit of the doubt. I walk in there and that turbo douche canoe was standing there in line.
Turbo douche canoe.
With no mask on, breathing on everybody. And I thought to myself, you are the jerk. You are the butthole. Because here's the thing. Back in March, wearing a mask was kind of weird. You'd look around and most people didn't have them. But you had one because you're like, well, I'm just trying. F me. I'm trying to save your life. That was what you're trying to do. Now, it's not that the people that don't wear them look weird. It's that we know they're a-holes who don't give a flip about the people around them enough to wear a dang piece of cloth on their face. And that irritates me. Like, I was fine being a weirdo. You should not be fine knowing everyone with a mask on in that room thinks you're a butthole. Because that's the way I think of you. If I see you in a store that's crowded with people all over and you don't have a mask on, I have deemed you a butthole and I never want to see you. I don't want to see your face. I don't want you around my family. I don't want to know who you are. I want you to disappear. And I shouldn't have that reaction.
Stay away from the aisle that I'm on while I'm shopping.
I want you to stay away from everyone's aisle because everyone's trying to take care of themselves and their family. And you're in here doing whatever. You're like, I don't have COVID. Well, that's nice. Let's consider this for a moment. You go to your friend's house because, you know, you guys are anti-maskers. You're sitting around going, hey, we don't need a mask. I'm drinking a beer with my buddy. But your buddy, who you don't know what he was doing 3 days ago, is like, oh, I went to the dentist, took to the doctor. You know, they made me wear a mask, but I took it off as soon as I got out to the lobby. He's been walking around not feeling sick. Well, he gives it to you. You walk around not feeling sick for 3 days. Who all have you given it to before you ever start to feel a symptom? And you've been spending this entire time thinking, I don't have COVID. You know, like, and, oh, I'm young. I'll get over it. Like, F you. You don't get to make that decision because, yeah, you are young. You might get over it. But Jim, who gives it to Joe, who gives it to Sally, who gives it to Susan, who gives it to Grandma Benson, and Grandma Benson dies. And that's unfair. And that's the way you have to look at this thing. Jacob, let's go back. Talk about the Dodgers. Let's go back to Justin Turner. How many people got COVID based on that event?
So far, I think the last I read was 10, right?
10.
And people 10 got COVID because of Justin Turner being an asshole.
10 people, 10 days after Justin Turner did his thing, when they finally got sick enough to go get tested, it established that 10 people in the LA Dodgers organization got COVID because of somebody not doing what they were supposed to. Now, you can argue he didn't know, he was in the dugout, whatever. But for him to have gotten it, he would have had to have been silly or been around somebody who was silly before the game. And then he ends up with it, gives it to his teammates, hangs around with his coach with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and no consequences. Hopefully everybody feels better soon.
Yeah,
you know?
And let's not let the Dodgers organization off the hook. Let's not let Major League Baseball off the hook. I mean, they didn't have any kind of plan in place for a positive test to get him off the field and to get him out of the arena. You can argue whether or not it was transmitted during the game, after the game, before the game. I don't know. But I will tell you, it looks pretty bad from the Dodgers organization perspective to have that kind of bad publicity. And then on top of that, have 10 people 10 days later test positive. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty big black eye. I think every other sport is going, we're not Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and talking about just spreading in general, you're looking at the entire White House. It's like the freaking plague central.
Yep.
You know, I mean, right, Ben Carson guy, chief of staff came down with it. Ben Carson came down with it. He's a surgeon, Jacob. He's a world-renowned brain surgeon. I think the man is sleepy, but he did a great job as a surgeon. And he got it. If he can get it, anyone can get it. There's no level of money, success. You're a human body. You're a big bag of meat. And you're the same big bag of meat that everyone else is. It's what's going to happen.
Yeah. And to come full circle back on that, the original conversation was, what do you think about the election year? And, you know, and even Joe Biden and the mask mandate, I truly believe that Joe Biden is in a no-win situation relative to COVID-19 and wearing masks. I think we've created a situation where we've created camps. Either you're a mask wearer or you're a non-mask wearer. And even if he comes and says, I've got a national mask mandate, you need to wear a mask, the camp that's in the no-mask wearing zone still will not wear a no-mask.
They're
still
already
be
there,
no
yeah.
mask wearers. And then the people that wear the masks are still going to wear masks. So I think that even the symbolic gesture of saying a mask mandate, I think the only thing it does is say, yes, we're in a serious time, but I don't think it will affect anybody's actual actions.
Well, you can't say it's been a serious time if for the last 9 months everybody's heard it's not a serious time. Like, you can't just flip because the data's clearly not clicking. Or people would think 130,000 cases is a lot in a single day. Mm-hmm. Losing a 9/11 every 3 days is a lot of people.
Yeah, if you put it in that kind of context, the 9/11 happens every 3 days. Now, granted, we're not talking about an attack on this country.
Sure.
We're talking about a pandemic. So,
It's apples and oranges, but it's still just as serious. We're talking about a pandemic that's sweeping our nation. Look, guys, 10 million people across the world have gotten this, right? Bottom line here is that, what is it, roughly? Or no, 10 million people, sorry, in the U.S. have gotten it.
Yeah.
And what is it, 236,000 deaths?
It's been a lot, yeah.
Okay, so let's say 250,000 deaths, just to make the math easy, unfortunately.
Talking about globally?
No, let's just do the U.S. I think it's 10 million in the U.S. and 250,000 approximately have died in the U.S.
Confirm cases. Hold on, I'm going to find this while you're chatting about it.
But
let's see. 242,000. Yeah, 242,000. 10 million confirmed in the U.S., 242,000. Yep,
10 million in the U.S., approximately 250,000 have succumbed to this. Every year, the flu, you have between 50 and 60 million people get the flu in the United States, right? So let's say that the same number of people get the flu, get COVID-19. So 10 million now, it's going to be roughly 5x that. So 50 million will ultimately get COVID-19, the same number that normally get the flu. Let's just argue those numbers for argument's sake, because those are pretty well-known numbers for the flu. Roughly 50,000 people die every year from the flu. 50,000. Okay, that's still a lot, but it's roughly 50,000. I mean, it is. It's still a virus, right? So you're going to have some people with flu-related deaths. 250,000 times 5 is over 1 million. It's 1.25 million, right? 1.25 million people potentially are going to die if the same number of people get infected with COVID-19 this year that get infected with the flu every year.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a significant difference in terms of, like, just ratios.
Just in the United States. Yeah. 50,000 versus 1.25 million people. To me, that screams the importance of why people need to take this seriously, is because the death rate is so much higher than with these other viruses that we see commonplace. This is not a commonplace virus. And now that we're starting to see the 130, 140, 150,000 cases every day, we might have hit a break point where we might actually see some exponential growth where we start seeing millions of cases a day instead of thousands. And yeah. I don't think our testing can handle it. We'll never know if we hit the millions because our testing can't handle it.
Yeah.
We'll never be able to do that many tests in a day.
And I mean, you're looking at what's the rate? 2.5, one person infects 2.5 people on average.
Something,
I mean,
like that,
yeah. Yeah. If you're looking at, we've got 140,000 today. It's not that far of a stretch to see that continuing to increase by 10,000 a day or 20,000 a day and accelerate as it gets higher and higher and higher and higher. And like you said, the testing capacity is going to be so reduced, we won't know really what numbers we've impacted. Then, and there are asymptomatic cases as well that just people never develop a symptom. I'm not ready to hitch my wagon to the possibility that I'm an asymptomatic case. You know what I mean? Like, I was thinking about this the other day when Sam had his asthma attack and was like coughing, couldn't breathe at night. We had to give him his albuterol. I was thinking, like, somebody to ask me to take my child anywhere for any reason, if I believe that there's 1% chance that he gets COVID, you're crazy. I challenge any parent who knows there's a chance that their child could get COVID and die to go outside with them and just be like, go have fun. You know, you only live once. It's like, no, I want you to live past 6. Come on. You know, I've watched Sam not be able to breathe. I've rushed him to the emergency room before. I am not playing that game. I'm not playing that game with my kid's life for any percentage. That's why I'm excited about the news this week about the vaccine.
News number two, baby.
News number two. Pfizer announced 90% effectiveness in their vaccine trial, and then the CEO promptly sold like $5.6 million worth of stock, which is pretty wild. Jacob, I gotta ask this. I know we can't go deep into it, but I gotta ask this. Coincidence that it was on Monday and not last Monday?
No, I don't think it's a coincidence at all.
I don't either. I just saw that report today, and I'm like...
So bottom line here is that somebody else is doing the analysis. Pfizer is not the one who's doing the analysis. They have an independent group that's actually doing the analysis. So I think they got the news and they immediately put it out there in a press report. I don't think it was delayed a week. I don't think it was delayed a day. I think it was wasn't even delayed an hour. They saw 90% went, holy shit, I am putting this out tomorrow. I've got to be the first one there.
Yeah.
I can't let somebody else usurp that because the first one to the market is going to be the winner in this. And we're going to talk a little bit later about the cold chain and all of that. But the bottom line here is that the first one that actually gets a vaccine injected into a general population will be considered the winner. I firmly believe that. So
there's room for more than one, though. Like, let's say Pfizer gets a 90%, AstraZeneca gets a 90%, and Moderna gets a 90%. That would be good, right? That would be good for us.
Well, and so we'll talk about this later with the cold storage. But I think there is a lot of room in the marketplace for all three of those. And we'll talk about why in just a little bit. But and if you want to talk about cold storage first and then talk about the clinical trial, we could do that. But I kind of want to hit this clinical trial because I feel like Og has been chomping at the bit to hear what I have to say about it.
Yeah, I'm interested in the clinical trial. And I'm also interested in where they're saying, because from what I read earlier this week, a peer review had not been done on this data. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think you get that immediate release story is that they immediately released it even before peer reviews had been done, because it's not just a vaccine, right? It's not just the fact that we might have the possibility to come out of this from a medical standpoint, but it's that level, it's that hope, it's that rush of hope that you need about once every 2 weeks to know that things are progressing, so that you can progress, so that you can see the light at the tunnel and believe that it's not a freight train. It's the light at the end of the tunnel. It's a good one. And we're going to get there. And I think some of these things are necessary. And I think particularly given the circumstances of last week, I believe it's a coincidence that we got the report when we got it. But I think for a lot of people, this lifted them up, to know that there might be a possibility that we can get vaccinated and move forward. But yeah, let's talk about the study a little bit and that process.
So what is a phase 3 study? I feel like let's start with that.
Yeah, sure.
Phase 1 and phase 2, more talk about and toxicology and safety and efficacy in a small group of people. Phase 3 is where you test safety and efficacy in a large population of people. And I'm not talking about a small population. It is a large population, usually between 40 and 60,000 individuals enrolled in a vaccine trial like this. I personally do not work on vaccine trials. I work on other trials. There are a lot of different kinds of trials. There are drug trials. There are device trials. There are all kinds of different trials. Vaccine trials are just another randomized clinical trial that have different endpoints and different ways of working. But at the end of the day, they're all the same. They want to prove that it's safe and it's effective. And a phase 3 study is that last bridge between going to market. It's once you have proven that it's safe and effective, the FDA will give you either a emergency use authorization, which is what they're going to go for after this, or grant you permission to go ahead and manufacture and go into phase 4 studies, which means that you're in commercialization, you're doing tests on general population, you're still collecting data, you're still reporting out that data, but everybody has access to the drug and or the treatment and or the vaccine and or the device or whatever it may be. So that's the importance of this phase 3 study, is it's that last bridge between hitting, going from study to commercialization and actually in consumers' hands, right? And the FDA is the one who really evaluates this and scrutinizes this, right? In the first two phases of the study, the vaccine didn't cause any kind of serious adverse events. It did spur an immune response, so that's good. I think the study only had about 45 or 50 patients, if I can remember right. But bottom line is some of the side effects they saw were some fevers, I think, just standard fatigue, headaches, chills, muscle pains, joint pains, things that you see in a lot of these kind of vaccines and a lot of drugs. But no showstoppers like I think some of the other vaccine candidates had shown. So transition into this phase 3 study. I think they've enrolled about 45,000 people. I don't know the exact number. It's somewhere between 40 and 45,000 people. And they've done it in many, many countries. I think they've done it in Germany, obviously the U.S., some South American countries, I think Brazil and maybe Chile and Argentina. I think some African, maybe South Africa, But yeah, they've done it in quite a few places, and they've also done it in a fairly diverse group of people as well. And they had a data monitoring committee that also audited this data and actually performed the analysis of this data. And that's important because it's an independent group that's actually doing the analysis. So not only is it a blind study where patients don't know if they've got the placebo or the actual vaccine, but also it's kind of this almost triple blinded where they have an independent group actually doing the analysis. So
yeah,
it's as high of scrutiny. It can pass as high of scrutiny as humanly possible, especially relative to emergency youth authorization.
Yeah.
So I think 94, if I'm remembering it right, 94 patients have developed COVID overall out of the 45,000-ish people that have participated in the study. That's important because obviously this is going to have both the placebo arm, which is the control group. They're given they're not given the vaccine, but it's there's also a group that's usually split in half. Usually good studies are well balanced. So you have roughly half getting it, half don't, but they might have different arms of the study. They haven't put out the study yet. I think they might have submitted it to clinicaltrials.gov or .org. But I haven't actually seen the study. But I think 94 participants actually tested positive. And what 90% means is 90% effective means that, think about it this way. If you have a drug and you have 100 patients, let's just do 100 for ease of calculation. If you have 100 people that have COVID or get COVID, 50 of them are in the the placebo group. 50 of them are in the actual vaccine group, right? So half and half. What that means is you have the same chance of catching COVID, whether or not you're in the control group or the placebo group, because they're equivalent, half and half. So the way you calculate that is you take the number in the control group minus the number in the vaccine group, subtract them out, you get a number and divide that by how many are in the control group that tested positive. And so that will give you your effectiveness number. So think about it in this case, 50 of them from the control group, 50 of them from the vaccine group, 50 minus 50 is zero, divided by 50. Obviously it's 0% effective because you have the half, it's exactly half.
Okay.
Now let's take the example of 75, 25. 75 minus 25 is 50, 50 divided by 75, you get your percentage, right? And then it goes through there. It goes from there. What 90% effective means is, think about it this way, 95 people minus 5 people divided by 90 people, you get a ton. That's pretty much where you're at is approximately 90, probably 90 of the 94 participants in the control group were probably in the control group roughly, and roughly 4 were in the vaccine group. So we're talking about it being pretty damn effective.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
That's why people are so excited, is because I think we were expecting somewhere along the 50-50. So maybe 75 from the control group, 25 from the vaccine group. But no, we saw something a lot bigger. The problem with this news release is that they announced it as a news release. They didn't release the actual data. They didn't have it peer reviewed. They didn't publish it in a medical journal. It was a press release, meaning it was hot off the presses for them as well. They got it and they immediately put it out there. And this week now they're going to go through that process of actually figuring out what they can put online and then having it in the peer review cycle and then publishing it in a medical journal. So I expect in the next couple of weeks, we'll actually see some of that data rolling out. The other thing that's important here is that they're going to keep going with this study. 94 participants, they need to get a statistically relevant sample. And to get a statistically relevant sample, you need at least 165 participants. And there's a whole lot of math that goes into that number. What is a statistically significant sample sample size? And there's the math on it is absolutely absurd because you have all kinds of different rationales and confidence levels that you have to try to maintain. But the bottom line is they need 165 patients at the end. Right now they've got 94 that have tested positive. So they need roughly 60 more patients that are in the positive category.
And that's what we reported on a couple weeks ago, was that they couldn't even find they needed 32 or something for that phase of it or whatever they were dealing with at that point. And they couldn't even find 32 people that gotten it. And they're like, we need least this many people so we can figure out that effectiveness and that safety and all that stuff. They needed to know what was going on. So one thing we can talk about, or I think would be interesting, because this has been really eye-opening for me, and this is the hard-hitting health education that you get from staring at goats, a show named after our buddy's goat farm. But yeah, so this is the kind of stuff. But the mRNA aspect of it, this is the first vaccine of its kind. Yes, is that correct to say? So yeah, so they've got processes to creating it and store it. First effective or necessary vaccine. I know they've been working on this idea for a long time.
They've been working on it since 2002 with the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. I think that drove some of this work. But there has not been one that has gone through the FDA and actually been approved using an mRNA-based technology or genetic-based technology like this.
Okay. All right.
They're all protein, either protein fragments and or attenuated, the dead virus or some other protein that actually causes that antibody response.
Yeah, and this one's actually emulating that spike protein that a virus uses to grab a hold of a cell and go, you're mine now, and consume it.
Well, it goes, you're mine, and you're going to actually force the body to make this specific protein that then causes the reaction, which is a completely different way. What, instead of giving you a bolus injection of this protein in your body going, hey, that's foreign, let me go attack it. Mm-hmm. Now what you're doing is you're injecting little fragments and having them attach actually to the cell itself, and then the cell replicating and generating these proteins and going, ha, 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 we're generating this protein now. Yeah. And so your body going, ooh, that protein's no good. I don't know what the long-term ramifications are going to be because I don't think we understand enough about it. But it's, if the FDA gives authorization for this, it potentially could open Pandora's box relative to how vaccines are created, because you could think about all the vaccines that have already been created will now be revisited to see if maybe this kind of technology actually applies.
Yeah. And moving on to a question that I saw in the chat from Zafo, do we know anything about the longevity of the vaccine at this point?
I don't think we do. I do know that the immune response is pretty high. And so they're talking about it actually lasting a substantial amount of time. What substantial means, I don't know. But we've seen if you have the convalescent plasma, you're talking about 3 to 4 months, maybe even up to 6 months in some studies that I've read. And we're talking about probably more than that, but I can't say for sure. I mean, until we actually have the data, but I would expect it to be slightly longer than what we would see there.
So
I would expect 6 to 9 months if I had to make a educated guess.
Yeah. And I think to help people understand that, it's also useful to talk about the expiration date of a Twinkie. Twinkies have expiration dates. Most foods do. That being said, those expiration dates are generally not for safety. They're just for quality and taste. But more importantly, and to the point, is the expiration date can only be as long as you've tested it for.
That's pretty true.
If you only watch that Twinkie mold for 2 years, and you're like, 2 years, I can still eat it. I feel like if after 2 years you haven't eaten it, that you're on your own, buddy. But I can at least guarantee that it's solid for a couple years. And that's what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with a virus we just started understanding January, February of this year. At best. First vaccine trial started, what, April, May? Started poking at it. Like, we can't have more months of knowledge beyond that. And now that we're expanding this Pfizer vaccine to more people and trying to find more people, we're not going to know the true length of that for X months out. So it's unreasonable to expect that of a study. They can't predict the future. That science doesn't operate in wishes. It operates in what it knows. And I think that's something that's worth mentioning to folks who might not understand how we can't know, like, generally, well, can you look at the drop-off rate of the antibodies over time? And it's like, well, sure.
And the other aspect to this that I think is important is this is an mRNA. It is a different type of vaccine, right? One that we haven't dealt with. Mm-hmm. In a lot of these studies, what they do is what's called accelerating aging. So they put it in a slightly warmer condition. And based on the Arrhenius equation, you can actually predict what it would behave like
in an accelerated aging space. So bottom line is that you can accelerate the aging. What normally takes 2 years, you could do in 3 months based on enough time, enough humidity and enough temperature. Right.
Yeah.
But the mRNA sequence is not stable. This vaccine is not stable. You might have days at room temperature. You might have days at refrigerated temperatures. We just don't 100% know. Last I heard, you've got about 4 or 5 days before you can, you've got to use it once you've thawed it out, or else it won't be, it will have spoiled.
So
aging is out.
Yeah.
So that means that you have to do real-time aging. That means when you start that study is what, I mean, that dictates the expiration at that point.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that I think we've been concerned about, and Kelly brought up episodes and episodes ago, was distribution. She was talking about mRNA. Kelly, she has a vast array of knowledge in this space. And that was what she said. mRNA is unstable and it needs to be kept remarkably cold. And one of the things I think that's a concern across the nation is that the flyover states, generally you've got the state capital might have a freezer able to hold this stuff at a temperature. But, you know, Jim Bob's doctor shop down in Bent Fork, Tennessee, they aren't going to have the resources to inoculate their society, their patients.
Yeah. And this really gets into the distribution channel. And I'll quickly run everybody through what the distribution channel is. Operation Warp Speed had partnerships with people to try to improve distribution and to set everything up prior to having a vaccine ready. And I think it chose McKesson as their primary partner to be able to do that. Pfizer said, no, thank you. Thanks, but no thanks. We've got our own distribution channel. We appreciate your help, but we don't need it. They also said no thanks to help with development and clinical trials as well. They said, thanks, we got this. No thanks. But anyway, the bottom line here is that it requires about minus 100 degrees Fahrenheit to be able to store this. For anybody that knows, that's flipping cold. That is really cold. And you need a hell of a coolant to get there. Just standard ice will not get you there. Even dry ice may not be effective at those temperatures. You're going to have to go down to liquid nitrogen or some other coolant that actually might get you there. But what Pfizer has done is they've designed these specific suitcases that have GPS on them, this real-time GPS, so they know exactly where they're at. These little shipping containers that can hold up to about 5,000 doses at these ultra-cold temperatures, these ridiculously cold temperatures. And they can last for up to 10 days. So in absence of these crazy freezers, they've got these storage bins that can last up to 10 days and keep it their vaccine cold for up to 10 days. So they are reusable, and I think they've got trucks that are also refrigerated that help facilitate that. They're hiring FedEx and UPS and all of the other major carriers to be able to ship this in as cold of environments as they can. They also are responsible for getting them there in a timely manner. They've got two distribution places, one in, I think, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and the other is somewhere in Brussels, I believe. I can't remember the name of the town in Brussels. But that's mainly where they're going to be going out of. So anywhere in the U.S. is going to be getting them from Michigan. Anywhere in Europe or potentially Asia will be getting them from Brussels.
Brussels, Belgium. Brussels is the name of the city.
Brussels.
Unless you mean it's in Belgium.
Like maybe Brussels. It's in Belgium. I can't remember
Brussels,
exactly.
What is the name? Yeah, the battleground of the world, Belgium.
It's in Belgium. It's not in Brussels. It's somewhere else
okay. In
Belgium.
Some other place
Brussels came to mind because it was
chocolate and waffles and French fries.
Yeah, French fries with mayonnaise on them.
You should eat French fries in Belgium. I was told by a guy who was stationed in Belgium for quite a while. He's like, if you go to Belgium, you eat the French fries. Because, little known fact, French fries are not French. They're Belgish.
They're
Belgish.
Belgium-ish.
Yeah, so you need to eat the French fries in Belgium, and apparently legit. And there's French fry carts and chocolate carts. Okay, I'm sorry.
So you could go get your vaccine and a bin of French fries.
Sure, yeah. That sounds great, actually. That sounds like a wonderful combo.
Hello. And fries, baby. Vaccine and fries.
Hello, Mickey D's. I would like a vaccine and the French fry.
Please.
Please, so thank you.
So bottom line here is that you've got production that's costly. You've got distribution that's costly. You've got a vaccine that's unstable that requires this ridiculous cold chain storage. You have a short shelf life, and all of these things are challenges, right? And the likelihood of it actually being delivered in a doctor's office is really low. So we're talking about dispensing it at these major medical centers. And the likelihood of getting Jim Bob in rural Eastern North Carolina to actually go up to Pitt Memorial Hospital and get it is unlikely because he's got to drive 2 hours to go get it. Right.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the only facility that has it. So it's going to be difficult and it's going to be a challenge, especially reaching the last mile.
Sure. Yeah. But does the last mile, we're looking at the need to vaccinate as many people as possible so they quit spreading it to each other. How important is the last mile if you can get major population centers and at least a portion of that last mile that is willing to drive? Like let's say you've got somebody in Morganton, North Carolina, and they can drive to Charlotte and get it. And let's say 60% of people, that's incredibly high, but let's say 60% of people in Morganton are going to be in either Charlotte or Raleigh or, you know, Charleston, South Carolina or wherever, Columbia, and that those places have the ability to give them the vaccine. They drive that far to get it. Does the last 40% in Morganton have as big of an effect on the overall health of the state or country or city if you've got that many people vaccinated?
It's a good question. I know that herd immunity is the what you're talking about here.
Right, yeah.
You're talking about if a certain number of people have the vaccine and aren't transmitting it and aren't getting it, then that reduces the population that can get it or that has it so low and makes them so spread out that the likelihood of them transmitting it is really low.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the herd immunity number is for this virus. Nobody does at this point. It could be 65. It could be 75. It could be 85. It could be a magical number that's lower than that, maybe 40. I don't know what it is. And I don't think anybody does at this point. So talking about the last mile is probably a little premature.
Sure.
I don't even think we're talking about the last mile. What I think we're talking about is doctor's office, places that do have access to facilities that just don't have access to these kind of lab grade facilities.
Yeah. And we're talking about
major medical centers. We're not talking about your standard everyday doctor's offices.
Yeah. And I think we're talking too about, you've got the government playing into this pretty heavy handedly. Like they're definitely concerned with being able to distribute this as a government. And one of the chief places government does health stuff is at state health departments. Where they use horse needles instead of tiny needles. So they
because they don't have the money.
They don't have the money
to be able to afford this stuff. So this is why at the beginning of the conversation we were talking about, well, what about these other companies that still may have a place? And maybe they're all 90% effective. I don't know. Maybe some of them are a little bit less.
Russia says theirs is 92.
Well, so the bottom line here is they all have a place in the market, right? If the first to market is this uber cold, ridiculous cold chain storage capacity where only a specific group of people can have access to it, then that's the first place to start. The second place may be the refrigerated conditions. And so then we're talking about it opens the doors for even more people. And then maybe it's some protein base that has a longevity not even refrigerated, but room temperature conditions. So we're getting even closer to it and we can start distributing at doctor's office. Then we might even get it to where it's high temperatures and thermophiles and things like that, where you can actually deliver it to really high temperature places that don't traditionally get the access to it. So that's why I think it's going to be there's going to be a staged approach, and this may be the first of those stages. There are going to be countries that decide to hold off, I guarantee you, because they just can't afford it.
Yeah.
And they can't maintain this kind of cold storage. Think about India. India has trouble vaccinating with refrigerated vaccines currently, right?
Yeah.
And if we're asking them to set up this ridiculous cold chain and maintain this ridiculous cold chain when they can't even do refrigerated cold chain, then the likelihood of success is really low. So we need to try to get them to that refrigerated point, which maybe Moderna's
vaccine will be able to help there. Or maybe J&J's vaccine will be able to help there, right?
I would like to point out India, we discussed this before, India is in several places, they've got a low hygiene kind of area, but are proving to be more resilient to COVID. It's not that they don't need the vaccine as bad as anybody, but it seems like they're, whatever's going on in their DNA seems to be a bit stronger, because I'm looking at deaths and cases, and I mean, they're about 2 million cases less than we have, but they're 100,000 deaths less than we are. 120,000 deaths just about less than we have. That's a pretty significant, like, I haven't done the math, but looking at it, that looks like a ratio difference, a worthwhile one. So not to say they don't need it or don't have it, but I mean, some of these countries are not suffering to the degree that we are in our, we wash our hands every 5 minutes culture of America. So I think that there's definitely a need to get it to everywhere. I don't know why I'm talking about this. It just struck me when I looked at those numbers for India. They are the second in the world.
Yeah, but we're talking about countries that are going to have to make this kind of decision.
They're
going
to have to have it, yeah.
Things that are playing in their favor, like maybe something that's negative that's actually becoming a positive for them, which is maybe a lower hygiene is actually helping them in this fight against coronavirus.
Yeah, but they're dying from other things. Like it's one thing I can sit here and point to statistics. They're not dying of COVID, but they're dying of polio and they're dying of the hepatitis related junk. I mean, it's bad news over there on any given day. So COVID's probably not the number one concern on their mind all the time. They're like, we still have people cleaning out outdoor toilets with buckets. Like this is. They, you know, and that's not to paint that picture of India. I know there are places in India like that. There are places in India that you go and you're like, this is great. I don't even notice a difference.
And there are places in the United States that may be just as rural or maybe the exact same.
Yeah. So Og, to comment on that, he says he works with a team in India and they said they feel the news is not reporting the reality of their city. Which could be very
good or bad though. I mean, I don't think I know which one he's referring to.
I was assuming it was worse than the news is reporting. Major tech cities are not in India are not like that. I didn't figure. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not referring to that. I'm referring to the small farm in India that my buddy Bose came from. And he was like, I bought my mom a refrigerator last year. And I'm like, wait, what? What do you mean? And she doesn't even use it. She's like, what is this for? So Og says it's worse. Yeah. It's worse. Yeah, and I'd imagine so. I don't like being number one on this list, though. This is bad. We should not be number one. It's definitely that the Spanish flu all over again.
Yeah. But I do think Kelly was right whenever we had her on, and I'd love to get her back on, especially maybe in the next couple of months to really revisit some of this with her. But yeah, 100%. It's something that now it's the next challenge, which is in front of us. Now that we have some opportunities for vaccines, let's talk about how to get them into the people's hands that need them and make sure that the FDA has everything that they need to be able to give emergency use authorization and get them out there start vaccinating people.
I want to go traveling again. And if they could get this moving, and I know the first responders are going to get it first, and they should get it first. First people that come face to face with us every day, your PAs, your doctors, your emergency room, your nurses, all those folks, paramedics, people who take care of other people as for a living should definitely be the first on this list. And then I don't know how they're going to distribute it after that. I would hope it's some sort of lottery because they've already said we expect to be able to distribute this for free to America. If you're going to do that, you got to figure out who gets it first and how we decide. Is it just I pull your social security number and you get to go to the doctor today? It's like that movie Deep Impact. You got your social security number pulled and you get to go to stay in the cave when the meteor hits.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure companies are going to buy some. I think corporations, LabCorp, et cetera, are going to buy some.
Sure.
There's going to be distribution channels that are not traditional that are probably going to be set up and established. I think if we rely on the government to do it, I have a feeling it might not be as effective as one could hope that it would be. But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, the Ace says women, children, and people named Ace first. I like it. I like it. I think that's fair. Let's go ahead and take that model and run with it.
I've got a buddy of mine named, his nickname is Ace. Does that count?
Sure. We'll make that work. Well, then, man, we've been at this for a little while, but I think we really poured through a lot of information, and I hope that folks have been able to get a little bit of answers in a normal layman's way. I know I learned a lot just from listening to you tell this long and exhausting tale of how a vaccine is born.
And exhausting is probably right. I'm sorry that
I got overwhelmed
with information today.
No, it's so good, dude. It's so good because there's so many things I didn't know. You and I both were determined to do a half hour power, and we're at an hour and 10 minutes, which is perfectly reasonable for an episode of Staring at Goats and likely as much COVID news as you can take. So here we are hoping for the best as we move into the next weeks. We'll keep you updated on what we hear.
Speaking of the best, I want to call out, if he's still around, I still want to call out Head Gamer.
Oh, yeah.
For what he did today. He streamed for 14 hours. He raised money for military suicide, ending military suicide. He played a lot of video games, had a lot of fun, and raised a lot of money. And kudos to you, sir. You are an amazing human being, and we are privileged to have you in the Legion with us.
Absolutely. That's a huge shout out to Head Gamer. His goal was $200 for 22 Kill, is the name of the organization that helps prevent military and first responder suicides, and ended up coming out of there with $450, which is fan freaking tastic. Anybody that streams on the internet and tries to make money for charity is great. You know, yep. I mean, never mind. We do it too. I don't mean to make that like a, but whatever. No, Head Gamer's the best.
Next year, I will tell you this, Head Gamer, get us involved.
Sure.
We will gladly join you for an hour to give you a break if you want to keep the party rolling. And if you want some help next time, let us know. We're there for you, brother.
He's been in Discord a lot, asking questions, trying to get some ideas on what to do. I think next year rolls around, we can certainly combine forces as many different ways as we can. And speaking of charities, we also launched our book yesterday. If you're listening to Staring at Goats, I hope that you're a fan of the things that we make over at Two Dorks. Well, the Legion of Dorks is our community, and we just published our second short story anthology called Horizons, an Anthology of Epic Journeys. It came out yesterday. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble. You can buy it on Kindle eBook. You can buy it. You can use Kindle Unlimited if you're a member of that program. Page turns make us money. And half of all those proceeds, including the free Kindle Unlimited page turns, will go to Toys for Tots. So if you're looking for a way to support a charity, but also kind of get something out of it yourself, buy that book. It's freaking great. It's wonderful. There's quality content in there. And the cover, it's gorgeous. You want that paperback. Oh, yeah. You want it.
Oh, yeah. And next year, we're going to have another one. So everybody who's in the Legion, we'd love to have stories submitted next year.
Sure.
Kelly, I'm sure, would love to have a few more thrown her way. But, yeah, we're going to do another one next year. But our charity stream is, Stephen, you want to get into that? December 4th?
December 4th. Yes. Friday, yep, December 4th.
And we are reaching out to a few folks in the community because I do know that we're going to try to co-op a couple of games, especially toward the end of the night. I'm sure that Sean can attest to this. At the end of a 24-hour or 12-hour stream or 14-hour stream, you start getting a little loopy. You start struggling quite a bit. To have the community around and actually talking to them and them lifting you up is a heck of a lot easier than trying to do it solo. So we're going to try to probably enlist the help of the Legion toward the end of the night.
Yeah, we've got a really great lineup of games and entertainment in store. So I hope you guys are interested in swinging by and tossing some money at Toys for Tots. We'll get all the details, all the links, all that stuff all lined up here in the near future. But that's a lot to end the show with and fill your ears with. But it's going to be great, and we'll continue promoting it until the day we do it. But man, That's it. That's it for Staring at Goats this week. I hope you've all had a good time. If you enjoyed the show, give us your review, favorite podcasting service of choice, 5 stars. Reviews are magic. They're magic. If you bought our book and you've read any of it, reviews on our Amazon page is huge. I don't care if you just write this book, great. Stephen, do good word.
Stephen, write good word.
Stephen, write word. It's so good. It's so important to us, and it actually helps a lot more than you may realize. And if you want to support us monetarily, if you want to support us, patreon.com/twodorks is the place to do that. Go ahead and join us up. Join up with our friends Hammerdwarf, Og, Adam, and Christina of Geekheim, Oddly Normal One, and our parents who support this network and help us keep doing the things we do without us having to break the bank. You guys are amazing. We appreciate you more than you know. And we'll see you next time here on Staring at Goats.